We'll discuss that on our upcoming podcast, Tech Bros.
Ooh, tech. That sounds awful. That sounds like the worst. Oh my gosh.
Hey, bro. Did you see this new Google Duplex? Anecdote.
Anecdote. I have an anecdote for you.
It's fascinating.
Well, no, it's not really an anecdote. It's more of a little complaint.
Okay.
So from the beginning with this show,
right?
We have not said we were following a schedule, right?
Right.
Initially, we thought we were going to release randomly,
uh-huh.
Probably every other week. And then relatively quickly, we ended up at a like once a week cadence because
yes,
we like doing this or something, right?
Right.
And apparently, what we have apparently regularly enough started doing, probably just because my schedule has lined up this way,
mm-hmm.
is we record towards the end of the week, I edit over the weekend, and send the episode over to you to sort of listen to, make sure everything's good.
Right.
And then I finish up on Monday night, and it goes out Tuesday morning as my little, you know, morning gift to everybody.
Right.
As we've talked about in the past. And unbeknownst to me, people apparently are expecting this episode to come out on Tuesdays.
Right.
And I don't know if you've gotten this, but
oh yes,
last week, for reasons that we can get into in a second if you want, we had to record on Saturday, which is much later than normal,
mm-hmm.
which the amount of editing that I usually do means it's not, I can't really get it all done and released
right.
on Tuesday.
Which we're doing today as well. This is a Saturday.
Which we are also doing today. Right. Today is also Saturday. And so I got a whole bunch, not a whole bunch, but I got a decent amount of people being like, hey man, where's the episode? What's going on? And I used to think like, I care about getting this thing out, but like nobody else cares. And then I got myself to the place where I'm like, hey man, like nobody else really cares when this goes out. Nobody else is like following a schedule and making sure we're doing things. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares that much about our show.
Nick sure does.
And then I'm getting all these texts that are like, hey man, where's my episode?
Right. Yeah, Nick frequently comments. He's like, hey, you guys haven't had an episode in like 3 weeks. I was like, no, we had one on Tuesday and then we had one on Thursday this week.
So I just want to say, one, I guess I appreciate that we're thought of. So I guess that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we might not have episodes on Tuesday. In fact, we're definitely not going to have episodes on Tuesdays, probably for a little bit. And do you want to explain why?
Because right now, I work 4 to 12 during the weekdays because
4 to 12 meaning 4 p.m. to midnight.
Yeah. Yeah. 12 right. at night. And that's because I my day job is a high school, well, night job now, and I'm maintenance. And so that also is, I also, you know, work events occasionally and basically act as security whenever, because they don't have security. And so
you're a bouncer.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically.
And the school year is wrapping up, and the high school that I work at, they have actually heard a lot of very specific chatter online through the grapevine, that, like on Facebook and social media and stuff like that. I don't know the specifics of how they acquired this information, but that there's going to be some sort of senior prank, and apparently it was going to be destructive. Not intentionally so, but negligently so.
Is it chickens in the hallway?
No. So so I've been here going on 3 years now. I don't remember what the senior prank was the first year I was there.
Uh-huh.
I do remember last year they got a key to the back door and they drove the gator inside the gym, which the gator is like a little four-wheeler thing.
I was about to say, you should specify.
Yeah.
You're talking
yeah.
about a four-wheeler, not the animal.
Right. Yeah, the school gator, they rode
they
it into
drove
the
it.
Gym. Yeah.
Right. Normally, the rule is you can only ride the gator outside.
Right.
But,
right. No. So they did that. And this year, there's been a couple. So the couple that they've heard of was, one was, we have a new like school shuttle bus, and they were going to put that on cinder blocks and take the wheels off as a joke, which it could go off without a hitch, but it could also go off with a hitch and destroy the car and hurt the kids involved.
Right. Yeah. There's quite a bit of damage to the vehicle and the kids.
So they remedied that situation by, they have one of the teachers there who's one of the, He's just like someone that's always helped out, and he's going to be retiring soon. And they allowed him to just drive it home every night. And then the other thing that they were saying was they were going to camp out with a bunch of tents and stuff on the football field, which at any other high school wouldn't really be a problem. But we have a turf field that's extremely expensive to keep maintenance and to have upkeep if there's any damage to it. And if anybody were to negligently or ignorantly like put stakes in the ground on that field, that would be like thousands upon thousands of dollars of damage.
Yeah.
Just because they thought it would be funny to put tents on the field and not even thought about it.
Right, right.
And so I have to stay there till midnight. And then I don't know how they swung this, but they literally have a cop show up every night at midnight and sit there for a few hours. Like, I don't know how you do that. Do you just hire that, or do you just tell the department?
Yeah, I think a lot of cops do.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing.
What's it called? It's like a big source of revenue for police officers, apparently.
Yeah, they said hired security. So, and then a cop showed up.
Right. So, like, a lot of them do. It's why you hear a lot about like an off-duty officer working as private security did XYZ.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Like that is a source of revenue for a lot of officers. We had that at work for a while.
Yeah,
where like in the hours that we would get out and people would be going out to the garage because we work downtown.
Yeah,
whenever there was a lot of stuff going on downtown in the last couple of years, there was a period of time where we had an off-duty officer that would come, and he would just park in the parking lot.
Yeah,
and sometimes he'd walk around, but he was in his police car.
Yeah, that's the part that threw me off. Like, I can understand if you're like, oh, I'm an officer that does like the security for hire thing on the side. It was like, hey, I'm showing up looking like I'm in capacity for the county.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know if they're like technically breaking rules by doing that.
Yeah.
But it's extraordinarily common.
Yeah.
So at most, I assume it's one of those like people don't say anything.
Yeah.
Nobody really cares things. But it's probably explicitly allowed just as a way to try and make up for the fact that, you know, a lot of cities can't probably pay their officers very much money. So,
yeah, I actually talked to him the other day, and he actually apparently has already stopped the attempt of whatever the thing is. Like, he said a bunch of kids showed up with sleeping bags and stuff, and he told them to go home, and that he'll literally be here till graduation. So
nice.
He's already turned that away. So there's really no point in me staying this late anymore, but all of that to say, like, that's sort of the reason why we haven't been able to record at our normal time in the weekdays, because normally I would just come home from work and we would have time to record. But asking you to record at like 12:30 at night, as well as myself, is sort of insane. So until school ends, that's going to kind of be how it is.
Yeah. And it's not a big deal because nobody's expecting an episode to come on Tuesday morning.
Well, Nick is.
It's just going to be at some time, you know. You're going to wake up and you're going to look at your phone and you're going to go, oh, look at that.
Right.
Unexpected little gift.
Right.
That's what's going to happen. Maybe even if we go back to our regular schedule, maybe I'll just start releasing them on random days of the week.
Yeah.
Probably not, because once they're done, I just want to get them out there.
Yeah, I understand. Nifty. Nifty gifties.
Nifty gifties. That's what we should name our next podcast.
We can't do that. That's a joke from The Office.
No. Why not? People, you can take a joke. You can steal jokes. That's how the internet works.
I'm really unclear on the copyright stuff, so okay.
Do jokes have copyright?
I don't know.
I wonder how that works.
I would imagine you can't just act out the scripts from The Office and they'd be okay with that.
I mean, I don't know. Like, don't comedians kind of rip on other people's bits a lot?
I think it's weird because I just said I'm the one that doesn't know about this, but I think I would go to what you had said to me in the past, that like it's fair use if you're like, I don't know, like substantively like modifying it. Like, so if you quote a large section and then talk about it, I guess it might be all right. But
then what if you're doing impressions? Doing your best to not modify it.
Sure. Yeah. It's a fine line. It's sort of like, you know, being a sex worker is illegal unless there's a camera present, then it's
yeah,
then it's completely
then it's
legal.
Very above board. Yeah, yeah, exactly. yeah, I mean, I know it's frowned upon, you know, taking other people's jokes, but I don't know what the legal status is.
Right.
If we have any comedians that listen that want to let us know, please do.
Yeah, I'm sure we have a bunch.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And not just like, oh, my friends think I'm hilarious, like type of comedian, but like, you're, yeah. Anyways.
No, you like do gigs, you know?
Right.
If you have been sued because you stole somebody's, that's the only time we want to hear from you. I assume you probably haven't seen this. I just saw this this morning, and I didn't look a whole lot into the actual story itself, but it's more that the conversation around it, I'm kind of interested in your thoughts on.
Okay.
So basically, some researchers at Yale University have said that they have reanimated a brain of a decapitated pig, and that they could keep the brain like active for up to 36 hours. And this is just so that they could do some research. But like, obviously the big part of this is the sort of ethical, interesting debate that has then sprung up around, you know, is this okay? Are we, what do we think about what this means?
Gotcha.
And I'm curious kind of what your immediate thoughts on that are.
My immediate thoughts, I'm sure there is some ethical things to consider. My immediate thoughts though are, who cares? Like, and to nuance that a bit, like, I feel like a lot of people that don't like these sort of things, how do I put this delicately, because I don't want to dump on people, but I think people fear it because of like religious or spiritual implications of what it might mean. Like, they're afraid of what it could mean toward something that they believe. And like, it doesn't, like, at least that's where my mind immediately went to when I saw this story posted here. But it doesn't bother me, because to me, it's sort of like, if there's ethical considerations as far as like, you know, Frankenstein, like bringing murderers back from the dead, sure. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about like, is it okay to do this? And I don't really see a reason why there isn't. Like, what would be, I guess that's my question, is what to you, what would be, what am I missing? Because I'm sure there is something. I'm just not thinking of it right off the top of my head.
So I get what you're saying. Like, I think of that conversation that you're kind of bringing up as the type of thing that people have when they talk about cloning.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, cloning like DNA from, you know, a dinosaur that they found DNA from, and like the ethics of that. That feel like they more come into the, are we playing God kind of conversations.
Sure.
And I think that's a very separate thing than the ethics of this, at least to me.
Okay.
To me, the big thing here is the basically the exact same conversation around AI, which is, you know, generally speaking, what is, if your like ethical framework is that you believe in limiting the suffering of other beings. You know what I mean? So like, if you believe that ethically raised like animals for food consumption, the reason that that's better than like, you know, big farms is because of like the suffering of the animals, not necessarily just whether they die or not. And in this case, if you're like reanimating a brain and it begins to experience again.
Ah, I see.
What sort of like unimaginable suffering are you putting this thing through?
Gotcha.
And it has no way of letting you know that. Now, obviously, you know, it's different because it's a pig. Now, again, same with the animal thing. Like, if you think that the big factory farms are evil, then this would fall right into that category, right?
Yeah.
But extending that further into like, if they could start doing, if there's a cadaver and they're doing this sort of research on a, you know, human body, are they waking the brain up so that it can experience again?
Right.
And would that cause extreme suffering? Does that make sense?
Yeah. I would say, like, I actually do personally subscribe to a sort of not pure utilitarianism, as it's, like, kind of, I feel, misunderstood sometimes, but, like, sort of a utilitarian sort of morality that's based by some sort of criteria of suffering. Like, that would, in a nutshell, without getting into the philosophy of morals.
Sure, sure, yeah.
That's sort of where I go to with a framework. And I would say, like, I get what you're saying. So if there was a way where you determine, like, this would cause some sort of suffering, like, let's say you wake me up, I have no body and I can't speak and I'm just alive and awake and being bored to death for 1,000 years. Yeah, that would be problematic. Like, I would say maybe then it's unethical. But I also feel like that's something that, like, people doing that sort of science would take into consideration. Like, you can put the brain to sleep even if you bring it back to life. Like, you can put it in a sort of, I don't know if dormant is the right word, but...
Well, so I think I would say that it is not true that people doing this research automatically would be people who would take that into account.
Gotcha.
Right. And so I think it makes sense to cause a big fuss about this so that people that are doing this type of research will take that into account. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Now, according to this article, at least, the way that this was reanimated was through like blood circulation, and they claim that there was no electrical activity. So, you know, the neurons were not firing, so like it shouldn't be experiencing anything. So it sounds like in this case they did like take that into account, and they at least had an answer to this dilemma that they at least thought was okay, right?
Right.
I don't know, like I don't know all the details, obviously, so I couldn't tell you that for sure they handled it all, but yeah, it seems like they have at least thought about that.
Right.
But it is definitely like a very interesting like dilemma. I assume that this is just because it makes research easier, because like if they're doing research on brains that, you know, they only like have a shelf life of however long after the animals died, and they can keep them sort of alive longer, I guess, which is a similar thing that they do with other organs, I think, already. But yeah, it's like the same thing with AI. Is if an AI is advanced enough to the point where it is experiencing things, then does it then fall into that category where your ethics dictate that you need to make sure it's not experiencing like suffering?
This is really frustrating to me because you have not watched any of Westworld, and there are examples that I want to give from that show that could tie into this, but I don't want to spoil it. I would just say that whenever you get to the point where you know you're causing some sort of suffering, that's where it becomes problematic. Like, I wouldn't say for the sake of whatever you can find out about the science, it's therefore okay to, like I said, like, make a brain come to life. And, like, imagine if I was dead and then all of a sudden I just woke up with all the thoughts that I have now and was just experiencing, you know, life, but couldn't talk, couldn't move, didn't have a body. Like, that's the thing.
That's the problem, is that you can't. You don't know. I mean, that's the thing with AI too, right? Is that like you don't know if you've crossed that threshold where it could experience suffering or something, right?
Right.
And so I don't even know, you know, I have, these are not fully thought things in my brain yet either. This is an interesting like little blip on the radar of like science ethics that I have never really thought about.
Yeah, it certainly is interesting. The brain is just such a weird thing, though. Like, you would hope that the people in charge of it would, like I said, would take those sorts of things into account. Like,
but people that are on the ground doing stuff like this are often not the same people that you want, like, having the sort of morality, philosophy discussions about it, right? Because they're in a position where they're going to want to push things farther, because they're like, hey, you know, I'm doing like Alzheimer's research and this is going to be worth it for that because this is so important. And like,
well, that's how we got Planet of the Apes. So
exactly, that's how we got Planet of the Apes, is like the scientists are pushing towards a goal, and what you want is somebody who's a little more divorced from the emotions of all that,
right?
Kind of involved in that whole discussion, and clearly that's us.
Yeah, and that's where I think I agree with you. It's just like because I would actually fall on the, I mean, I have no evidence to back this up because I'm not a neuroscientist, but I would just say my gut is that like if you were able to successfully actually kickstart a brain, whatever that means, it would be whatever that person was. Like, I think that's where people reside, is inside the brain. I think that's what makes up people, like as far as their personality and everything. And if you actually had a healthy brain that was able to be kickstarted, like I would say, yeah, there is some ethical considerations there. So yeah, I don't know. It like I don't think you would just be dealing with an empty vessel. You wouldn't be dealing with just a piece of matter, but they would be able to but that's the thing, is like I keep going back to, I feel like they would be able to know, like I like you're kind of looking at it like, well, these people on the ground level don't have these sorts of considerations, but I'm saying like I guess I'm kind of looking at a different thing and saying, like, they would be able to know whether something, because someone can put something on your brain now and figure out whether you're thinking or what side of your brain is being used.
Well, all they're really able to do is say there's electrical activity happening over here.
Gotcha. Is that the same thing that people do when they measure your brain and measure that you're thinking, or is that a different measurement? Because I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
So actually, I think this is really, really, I am definitely not qualified to actually say this, but right. I think that if you do a like neurological research can come in like two forms. Mm-hmm. One of them is that they like insert probes into your head.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that one is measuring electrical activity. And that's like a way more accurate thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that like array of stuff that they put on your head, I can't remember what that's called, where they're measuring brain activity. You know, the thing that you think of, because every Mythbusters episode seemed to have one of those things or something involved. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
And then you see like the map of the brain and it kind of has hot spots on it.
Right.
I believe that those are measuring blood circulation, which is a proxy for electrical activity, because brain like moves blood to the cells that need it for I could be totally wrong about that though, but yeah, I'll look it up and correct myself in the next episode if I'm totally wrong on that.
No, I will say though, I mean, I can at least agree with you that like, yeah, as far as bringing a brain back to life and having someone suffer, that's definitely something that should be taken into consideration. I just don't have the foundational science understanding behind neuroscience to like really understand what's going on there. I would just say that like if scientists could divine a way to bring a brain back, I wouldn't think it would be unethical to put it in some sort of dormant state, if that makes sense.
Right.
Because you could actually come up with an ethical question there, because I've been saying like, well, as long as it's dormant, then there's no suffering, because it's not like someone's alive and thinking and just bored out of their mind for 1,000 years. But you could also ask, well, like, well, is it ethical that if they have the potential to be awake that you put them in a dormant state? You know, that whole, like, I wouldn't say there's anything unethical about that. I would just say that if they are capable of figuring out some sort of precautions to where they could make sure that they could do their scientific research while not actually literally reanimating someone,
right,
you know, I would be okay with that. But I feel like if they were reanimating someone without the intent of actually bringing someone back to life, that's a whole different question.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And then you get the weird stuff like let's say robotics someday gets to a point where like it could handle something as complex as a brain. Like, could you, you know, do the whole science fiction thing where you put a human brain and it melds with technology and someone could essentially come back that way? There's also like the stuff that Elon Musk is working on, like the brain interfacing stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, the whole like San Junipero episode of Black Mirror. Like,
yeah, so that's, there is a like a section of like AI research that is taking the sort of brute force approach and trying to improve brain scanning technology,
mm-hmm,
to the point where we don't need to try and understand how the brain works. We're just going to brute force, like, model a brain electronically. And it might run at, mm-hmm, you know, a million or a billion times slower than the brain runs. But if you can model it, like, is that, if you're truly accurately modeling a brain, is that now a, like, sentient conscious experience that brain is having?
I would say as much as we understand consciousness, it would be.
Yeah. And but then like, is, so now you've created a like conscious artificial intelligence that lives in a computer. Yeah.
So let me give you my personal opinion is like, I don't necessarily write off like supernatural stuff, but when we're just talking on the ground level of what we can know scientifically, there's nothing that we can do to really measure anything metaphysical. So that's sort of like a moot point to me when we were talking about like scientific concepts. So like,
sure,
within the realm of like scientific concepts, like, yeah, like as far as we can tell, like I said, like I think everything is within the brain, whatever you are as a person, whether or not you believe in a soul or not, I still feel like it's completely centered in this brain thing because, you know, people get it damaged and they completely become a completely different person, or they get a tumor and become, right, like a murderer or something. Like, it literally affects the person you become by by prodding it in the wrong direction. Or you can have split personalities. Like, that's a real thing. Or there's even, you know, the experiments where people, like the split brain stuff, where like when the middle piece of the brain is damaged, like...
Yeah, is that a lobotomy? Is that what that's called?
Yeah.
Where they separate them?
Yeah, there's like weird cases of like someone who literally lives in fear that their like right arm is trying to kill them because that part of their brain is a different thing that they don't have
right
a way to vocalize, but is a different person. And it's like there's all kinds of weird stuff like that. So all of that to say, like, whatever consciousness is, even if you were able to interface it with a computer, if it's simulating, even if you want to use that word simulate, if it's simulating how a person operates and thinks and acts, I would say that they're then capable of suffering.
Right.
That's my opinion, because to me, this is very simplistic and ignorant of me, because I don't know the foundations of brain science and AI, either of them. But to me, I feel like people overcomplicate the difference between AI intelligence and like human intelligence. To me, it's just the difference in the mode that it, or the medium it takes to get to that functioning. So to me, like, we're just, to use a term, biological machines. So the difference is that it's evolved and it works with very, very different processes, but it's still processes that are determined from the laws of nature. And so to me, like, a biological person, it's just a different sort of machine that works in a very different sort of way with different organs, et cetera. And even if a machine, if it was doing and acting and, you know, in the same 1-to-1 ratio of how a human does, just through, you know, a program thing, like, I would still say that to me is a form of consciousness, because it's just a different medium, if that makes sense.
Right.
I mean, obviously there's tests that it has to pass. I'm not saying, you know, the Grandmaster Checkers program is sentient. I mean, but I also think I've heard much smarter people than me get into this whole thing, but like, to me, like, we sometimes get bogged down, I feel like, in terms that we create. And so, like, when we say consciousness or sentient, there's a lot of things we still don't understand about that, and there clearly is something it means to be conscious, but it could be just like a sort of complex sensory thing that's just so evolved over such a long amount of time. And if you can replicate that in, say, a robot or AI, I feel like that's the same thing. It's just a different mode.
Yeah, like, have you ever seen those experiments where they took rat brain cells and grew them on, like, a Petri dish, and then took those, like, grown brain cell clusters, I guess, and put them on a chip that had some input,
mm-hmm.
and could read electrical signals, and the signals that it read would, they put them on these little, like those little tiny robot things like you would do in a program, mm-hmm. you know, programming 101 class in, you know, college.
Right.
And the inputs would be, you know, proximity sensors. And all it would do is send a little electrical signal into that brain cluster, and the readings out of it would just control, you know, forward motion and turning and stuff.
Right.
And they'd put them in these little areas, and like, over time, those things would start like avoiding walls.
Huh.
And so, like, the idea, the theory at least there is like that brain is just like a change machine that all of our brains are, just a way less advanced one. And
yeah,
somehow, I don't know how they like told it that hitting the wall is bad or not.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, I should go find this and read this again, because it's been a long time since I saw this. But,
well, I know, like, brains can, like, I mean, I would imagine, just taking a stab in the dark, it has something to do with how brain patterns, you know, form neural pathways whenever they're taught and trained to do certain things. I don't know how that translates to the experiment.
Right. What I'm saying is, I don't know why that brain decided that, like, running into the wall is good or bad.
Gotcha.
And make a decision based on that. And maybe they, like, avoided the wall, and some of them intentionally tried to hit the wall. I have no idea how that actually went. I'll go find that link and put it in the show notes. But yeah, that was one of those, like, research things that was, like, simple, that I remember when I read it for the first time, it kind of, like, messed with me for a little while afterwards, because it was like,
yeah,
is that really all that this thing is? Like, your brain is just... It, I don't know, it, like, reduced it to this simple concept that I could understand in it probably isn't that simple, but it really screwed with me for a little while.
Yeah, for me personally, like, not to get into this whole other sticky part of a of this question, but like, so to me, it reminds me of like that duality, like, thought experiment. Like, if you were, like, let's say, hypothetically, they could successfully do a brain transplant, which we can't do, but let's say they get to the point where they could do that, which this could hypothetically lead to if they were successful.
I was about to say, I think this research kind of lends itself towards that.
So say, like, they switched our brains, like, would you be you in that other body? And I feel like the answer to that question is yes, because I feel like you're kind of contained in the brain. But there's other people. And
or at least your personality is contained in your brain.
The fact of the matter is we don't know at all, because it's not possible, and we don't know enough about consciousness. But, like, that is an interesting question, because there's plenty of people that I can't argue. Like, I can understand why someone's gut might be like, no, I feel like you are made up of, I don't know, your person in your body. I don't know. Like, they feel like that's a part of the composite.
Well, but even adding to that is the whole, what is the old, like, if you have an old ship and you've replaced every single plank of wood on that ship over time, is it still the same ship? And, like, that maps to the cells in your body, like...
Yes, exactly.
All the cells in your body have died, and they're all new cells compared to you, like, 10 years ago or something.
Yeah, like allegedly, I'm an entirely different materially... I'm an entirely different person than I was whenever I was born.
Right. You've just... You're a, like, carry-on of the offspring of that old version of yourself.
Right.
But you are not made up of the same materials as that.
Right.
And so, you know, how did your consciousness retain over all of that time?
Yeah, and that is interesting. I also feel like, again, like, to me personally, which I realize you can have the opposite opinion, but for me personally, I feel like it's like a sensory web sort of thing. But the thing is like, all this sounds like we're just like high and being like, no, man.
Yeah, man. I know.
I read this article once about brains, and but no, it's interesting. But yeah, another like, just to reiterate again, we don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, this conversation is kind of making me it's making me want to do a like book club episode, which we've discussed doing in the past on that Nick Bostrom book, Superintelligence.
Yeah.
Did you ever read that?
No, I have not yet. I still have it, because like, it sounded like you started it and then you kept saying like you were still reading it. So I was sort of waiting for you to finish and then I forgot about it.
Yeah, it was like the first audiobook I ever got, and I didn't have listening to audiobooks sort of slotted into my, like, I don't want to call it workflow because that sounds silly, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I've actually since done that, but I never picked that one back up. So I really enjoyed when I did listen to it, but
I can read it over the summer, like, well, pretty quickly. But I'm just saying, like, at some point during the summer, if you wanted to do that, I can probably read it in a week.
Yeah, we should do that. We'll figure out like a time, and we'll warn everybody with an appropriate amount of time so that, you know, other people can try it out. But
yeah,
we should do that. That would be fun.
Yeah. Okay, so this may be nothing. It may turn into nothing to talk about, but the specifics of this are not relevant at all. It's just sort of what kickstarted my thought process behind this. But when someone typically says propaganda now, that's typically always in negative terms. Like, people, you know, am I right in saying that? Like,
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, like, if you're accused of propaganda, like, it's typically a negative connotation. Because I guess the thought process behind that is... You are
manipulating people.
You are manipulating people into this political belief, whatever that might be. It's typically associated with politics. I'm not sure what else it would be.
I don't actually know what the definition of propaganda is.
Yeah, let's pull that up, because that's definitely relevant.
All right, so according to old Merriam-Webster, that is, propaganda is a congregation of the Roman Curia. I don't think that's the right one.
A well-known evangelical rapper? That's weird.
What?
How it is actually this? Is. There's a rap artist named Propaganda. Sorry.
The spreading of ideas, information, or rumor for the purpose of helping or injuring an institution, a cause, or a person.
Right. And so so Google's basic definition is information, especially of a biased or misleading nature, used to promote, publicize a particular political cause or point of view.
So anytime somebody's accusing somebody of propaganda, it's probably true, because right. Anytime somebody's sending out a pamphlet of information in support of their cause, that is propaganda by definition.
Right. Right. And so the thing is that's typically seen as negative. And I see a lot of, I guess this might be more just like, I think a lot of people, myself included, just automatically think like, well, if someone is doing propaganda, you can dismiss them, because I guess we treat it as some sort of logical fallacy. But my point is it may not actually be fair to do that.
Yeah, I think the big thing is it's important to recognize and then run anything like that through a filter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, it's, I think, important for almost all information. And I think, our generation has been, built to do this on the internet, because there's sort of an inherent lack of, there's not just automatic trust of, print media the way that maybe not our parents, but, our parents' parents
right.
had that sort of inbuilt trust, right? And I think it's important to try and understand the motivations behind anything you're reading.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that it's, you just toss it out and you don't pay attention to it. It just means if you're watching or if you're reading from a person who is a, animal rights activist, it's important to take that into account whenever they're citing facts and figures about, animal cruelty numbers and all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And the same goes for if you're listening to somebody who works for Tyson and they run a chicken factory. It doesn't mean that the facts and figures they give are automatically false. You should just know that they are cherry picking the ones that help their cause, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying I don't think it, I don't think it means it's bad, but I think it's important to understand.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And I think where my mind went to is sort of a lot of people will dismiss things. So to give a more fresh example, we just recently had another shooting in Texas, and every time shootings happen, and I used to be in this camp, if you remember, I would always I used to always think man, people are dead. People need to stop politicizing this. And you kind of over the years have brought me around to the idea it actually makes sense to politicize it. This is the time that this is, if you think this is something worth fighting for, it's a good idea to sort of promote something as a resolution to it. And correct me if I'm summarizing your words unfairly, but I guess that's the thing, is that a lot of people sort of think because someone has a political agenda behind this thing, it's therefore dismissible because it's just propaganda. They're just
right. That's actually a good example, because it's very, at least here in America, it's extremely charged. And I think of most of the people I know, and probably including me, it's one that I feel almost everybody is highly susceptible to confirmation bias and
right.
Dismissing evidence, contrary to what you believe.
Right.
And I think facts and figures, if you hear, if you are a person who thinks that guns need to go away, or I don't even want to say that because that's unfair, that thinks there needs to be more gun regulation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then anything you hear from the NRA, or a person who says that they like the NRA, or a person who says that they like guns at all, you're going to pretty much instantly dismiss their points, at least
mm-hmm.
from what I've seen, right? Because they're monsters or dumb, or they don't get it. And specifically with the NRA, it's they're just evil, right?
Mm-hmm.
And on the flip side, it's anybody who says anything in support of more gun control, it's well, they're just trying to take away our guns, and so they're going to manipulate any facts that they can get a hold of to try and
right.
Force this issue that's this political hot button ticket that they're just trying to use right now. And so you ignore the facts and figures that you get on both sides. And at least as right. far as I can tell, both sides of this seem to be very selective about their statistics. And it's kind yeah. of it frustrates me, because I do come down on a side on this. And
right.
I very strongly disagree with the way that the side that I come down on paints that picture often. Like, I'll look at their stats and be like, that is just, like, manipulative and very, very wrong.
In January, someone will say, there has been 1,223 mass shootings in the last 15 days. And it's like, hold on a second, like, what? And then you look at it and you're like, well, this situation didn't... Like they use the broadest possible brush to get the biggest statistical figure.
And it's like...
And it's not to say those other situations aren't worth talking about, but it's like, I know the NRA types are going to immediately dismiss everything you have to say because of a couple dubious situations you've included.
And that's, and the thing that's really frustrating is, like, we, are, I think you as well as me, we kind of have a leg in both worlds a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I witness people on each side hearing the, like, sort of ridiculous points being made by the other side and then completely dismissing everything that they say because of it.
Right.
And so whenever I see that happening, it like frustrates me to no end because it's like, well, I just heard what the hook is. Nobody's listening to you anymore. You just said this thing that they go, oh, see, look, you just did that thing. And now I don't have to listen to you anymore because you're just going to lie to me.
Right.
And I think that falls into that same thing where it's like, just because somebody is has an agenda, and even if they're saying things that aren't trustworthy, it doesn't mean that you can't glean it, say, things from them. Does that make sense?
Right. I guess that's my thing is, I don't remember who it was, but like in history, but in one of my college professors in one of my history classes back whenever I was at MOBAP, he talked about this example of someone who was a historian like somewhere in the medieval period or shortly after that before we get to the Enlightenment period, who wrote a history of England, and like he wrote it and just called it the history of England and had like apparently said that like his intent was, this is all you need. We don't need any other histories of England. This is like the most comprehensive, like I've done it. I've been objective, and this is it.
It has been. And it's like, it has been written down. There is no more that needs to be.
Yeah, it's done. You can pile on and then another 100 years and write of this 100 years forward. But you know, this is done. And it's like, it was this sort of like arrogance of like people think that there's like a perfectly objective observer, and it just doesn't exist. Like, and it frustrates me because that's the reality, but people are still operating as if like, well, where I get my news or whatever is this completely objective thing, so I can trust anything. And because another media outlet that I disagree with a lot has some bias, then I can dismiss everything.
Right.
And my problem is like everything has bias. I do. Like, yes, like you said earlier, like you should always filter it through like, well, CNN's going to be more liberal leaning, Fox is going to be more right leaning. So I need to filter what the information that they're giving me through understanding that. And you can understand the bias, but you still, you can't, like, there's so many things where like, you know, we've talked about before, like people will just label something fake news to dismiss it. And it's like, it sort of frustrates me, even though I realize this is just the reality we live in now, where someone will just call something fake news and they don't even disagree with anything in the tweet. They just don't like the source that it came from.
Yeah, I've mentioned it to you before that the hijacking of the term fake news is
right
one of the more frustrating things of the last couple of years, because it's like that has a real meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a real, and I assume still is, a real problem where, like, I would see people post things on Facebook and they'd be like, oh, I can't believe this is happening. And I'd see it and, you know, all the warning signs go off in my brain because it's like, you know, Obama talks to the lizard people again. And you're like, wait, what? That's coming from NBC.co.com. Like, this isn't a real thing.
Right.
That is fake news. It's like a fake site set up to look like a real site to literally say something made up.
Right. Or
that's different right. than bad journalism.
Exactly.
Even different than like tabloid journalism.
Right.
Like it can be really, really like shady and very manipulative. And I don't think it falls under that umbrella of fake news.
Yeah. Now it just means I disagree with you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't have to consider any of your points. Like disagreeing does not mean it's fake. It means you disagree. Like, if you want to say, hey, watch out for CNN because they have this slant in how they frame the information, absolutely. I agree with that. Like, they absolutely do. Like, I also think they have a problem with, like over dramatizing every single piece of news.
Yes.
And
I think that's the real problem with CNN.
Yeah, and that's extremely frustrating, and they do have that bias, but that doesn't mean that because they over-dramatize some certain story that all the information within that story is untrustworthy. It just means they hyped it up.
Right.
Like, that's what that means. And it's the same with Fox. If they downplay something, like, it doesn't mean that what they're talking about is not true, or that it isn't a huge deal or small deal, whatever. But it does mean, like, you should be aware that they're trying to downplay something. Like, that's all that means.
Right.
Doesn't mean they're wrong. But, I mean, obviously, and people can be as well. I'm not saying they can't be. I'm not just saying trust, you know, all news sources. But I shouldn't have to qualify that. So, sort of irrelevant. But you almost feel like you have to these days.
Yes. Yes, it does.
But, yeah, so all of that to say, like, I guess, like, I just never really considered that, you know, propaganda isn't, like, by its very nature something that's negative. I just think it's kind of meant that a lot.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Ironically, because of books like 1984, because they've made us so more aware of, like, what people and governments are doing, because they make us think about those things.
Yeah, I've always thought of propaganda more as, like, government-sponsored information marketing, I guess, for the sake of pushing an agenda.
Yeah, this may be one of those semantics things where it's like there's a technical term and like a popular term, and maybe we should go by the popular term because that's how people use it.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not sure.
So we have some news.
Yeah, we're creating a new podcast.
Yes, we are.
It's going to change everything for everybody, and it's going to be amazing.
Yeah, hopefully. So basically, I mean, we've talked about before on the podcast that, you know, some people like the movie episodes more, some people like the random topics episodes more. We're actually going to be dividing it and actually doing both on a regular basis, but part of because we're separating it up, I mean, it's a lot to ask Charlie at this moment until we hire staff to edit two long podcasts a week.
So basically, here's the deal. A-Town FM is going to remain as it is now, but the episodes will come every other week, generally, instead of every week, generally.
Right.
But every episode will be a normal episode, as opposed to having the movie episodes interspersed. So
right.
That means that the sort of stream of consciousness style episodes that we do, where you can listen to every episode and there's not spoilers and stuff that you need to skip, you can now just listen to every episode. And what we were formerly doing was just injecting those movie episodes, and that is going to be split into a whole new podcast that is called A-Town at the Movies, right?
Right. And really, kind of the practical reasons for doing so is, like you said, because I feel like our movie stuff was inconsistent. It was sort of scattered. There was no real, like, we could do a month where, like, three times we did a movie episode, and this actually keeps us on a schedule to where we uniformly do a certain amount for each podcast.
Well, yeah, I don't really want to promise that, though. I think it's going to be, like, the movie episodes can come out whenever we want a movie episode to come out.
Gotcha.
Sometimes we could have multiple in a week. Sometimes we could not have one for a couple weeks because it's a lull.
Right.
Or we decide to do some sort of special. We've had ideas for specials that we wanted to do with movie podcasts,
mm-hmm.
and we've never really been able to do it because we never wanted to have more than two movie episodes in a row, because that kind of puts a long lull between normal ones.
There were also weird situations where we didn't talk a long time about a certain movie, and we would just, like, put 20 minutes in the back of a regular episode, which was weird. So, yeah, I mean, it'd just be better because, like, we could do that all on its own. It would be on its own thing. And like you said, people wouldn't have to worry about, like, oh, I got to skip the back 30 minutes.
Right.
Because of it's a movie.
So
I haven't
it'll
seen
pretty
something.
Much be the same, you know, amazing movie commentary that you've come to know and love from A-Town FM.
Mm-hmm.
But just a little more focused into a single podcast. So here's the deal. We are going to ask for your guys' help for us launching this, because mm-hmm. I think we can maybe get a little bit of a boost if you guys can help us with this. So here's the deal. When this episode comes out, it'll be about a week from when we release our new podcast. And so the new podcast will launch with Solo, I think is going to be the first movie. And then immediately following, we will release our Deadpool episode, which we've actually just recorded. And so the help we need from you guys is, as soon as that comes out, if we're going to release a short little announcement on this feed to tell you that it's out, if you guys could just jump over there, and you'll be able to just search A Town at the Movies in anywhere, just like you, wherever you find, listen to us now.
Mm-hmm.
If you could subscribe and download some of the episodes, we're hoping that maybe if enough of you guys do that, we can trick iTunes into thinking that we're a bigger deal than we really are, and maybe get on one of their like new and upcoming charts. And that might
Which would be great.
That would be, it would be amazing. It's a pretty big long shot. I don't know how likely that is. We don't have like a huge audience or anything, but
we're going to Ocean's 11 Apple.
Yes. Basically. Yes. That's the goal.
which one of us is Brad Pitt and which one of us is George Clooney in this scenario?
I think that's obvious, Dan.
Okay.
yeah. So if we could get on there, that could get us a whole lot more viewers, which could potentially then feed into the main show, which the whole goal or the thing that I've really enjoyed about all of this is interactions with all of you guys. And so mm-hmm. if we can get more people in there and get more conversation going, that would be amazing. So it's a long shot, but I would really appreciate it if you guys could do that. So
yep,
look out for that little short announcement that'll come out about a week from when you're listening to us now, and go subscribe. And, you know, you could like retweet us or share us on Facebook or whatever. You can't share on Instagram, right? Isn't that a weird thing?
Yeah. Yeah, you cannot.
Yeah. So you can't help us if you're on Instagram, because
screenshot our Instagram page.
Yes. And share it on your MySpace.
Exactly.
And if you liked this show, or if you didn't like this show, whatever, you can let us know through any of our social media stuff at atownfm.
Right.
On any of the platforms, or atownfm.com for the website. And, you know, go find us on iTunes or Podchaser if you don't have an Apple device, and leave us a review, but only if you did like it.
I would say that Frodo is probably Matt Damon in the Ocean's 11 scenario.
Clearly. Clearly.
Because he's like up and coming. You know, he's trying to learn the trade.
I don't know. I think I'd say that he's the Chinese guy because of his acrobatic skills. You were just talking about him doing a backflip off your couch earlier.
Yeah. So, funny thing, and you can cut this if you want, but like, he made me really mad the other day because I bought him a harness so for like when we go to the park.
Oh, okay.
Just because I didn't want him to like slip out. And I was watching him and on the leash, figured out how to flip twice in the harness and twist it off of his body and started. This is like a double buckled.
It's impressive.
Harness that's completely tight around his body, and he figured out how to twist out of it. And then I immediately went stop, and he just rolled over on the ground, which is great.
So because, he wasn't even trying to escape; he was just showing off.
Right? Yeah, because we were in a park with geese, and he goes after them geese. So I was worried for a second. I was like, "Oh no!" And I immediately got him to stop, thankfully. But yeah. So he's the Chinese guy in Ocean's 11.